Hello and welcome to This Week I Learned, your audio guide to the most surprising discoveries and fascinating studies of the week. I'm your host, Lauren Hansen. This week I learned that a low-carb diet may be influencing your decision-making. Low-carb diets are built on the pillar of protein. When you're not eating bread, potato, and pasta, you need foods that can still satiate. Meats, dairy, beans, and nuts, well, those are all loaded with protein. And eating a lot of protein in a single meal can influence your brain function. That's because proteins contain amino acid. So eating a lot of them can cause an uptake of amino acid in the brain, and amino acids are a precursor to dopamine, and dopamine is the molecule behind our decision-making abilities. So basically what we have here is a domino effect. That steak breakfast triggers the amino acids, which triggers the dopamine, which changes your mind. But what happens next is what scientists wanted to find out. So they got a group of volunteers to play something called the ultimatum game. Basically, in a team of two, one partner is given a wad of cash, and then they get to decide how much to share with the other person. If the other person accepts the offer, both get to split that cash. But if they reject it, no one gets anything. Now, it may seem like an obvious ending, even if the offer is small, why not just take it? Certainly little is better than none, but humans don't work that way. We humans have the urge to punish those who treat us unfairly, even when it goes against our best interest. It's a bit of an evolutionary puzzle. Choosing no money over some money means suppressing basic instincts. But previous studies have suggested it also ignites the part of the brain that deals in morality. So if these previous studies have anything to say for how the ultimatum game would work out for our low-carb study, well, volunteers should have overwhelmingly rejected the cash offers. But they found the opposite. Dividing the groups into those who had eaten a low-carb meal prior to the study and those who didn't, researchers found that 76% of low-carb eaters accepted the unfair offers. That's compared with less than half of the high-carb group. When they tried the experiment again, this time feeding a group low-carb one day and then high-carb the next, the same was true. The low-carb eaters were more forgiving than those who ate a carb-filled breakfast. Now, the why may be the most important part, and it's still being sussed out by scientists, but they do offer a suggestion for that change of behavior. Dopamine is a part of the reward center of our brain. So after eating a low-carb meal, a protein-induced dopamine spike rings the reward bell in the brain, making the volunteers feel more satisfied with a low-ball offer. At any rate, it's worth a try. The next time you feel as though you need to be more tolerant in your decision-making, wolf down some steak and eggs and see how it goes. This week I learned the peculiar reason that Spaniards eat so late at night. If you've ever traveled to Spain, you may have noticed a certain lax attitude when it comes to typical workday schedules. On the weekdays, cities don't seem to come alive until after 9 a.m., dinner is around 10, and the party continues long into the night. And it's not because of that clutch afternoon siesta or the two-hour lunch. It's because Spain is stuck in the wrong time zone and has been for more than 70 years. Our time zones were created by scientists back in the 1800s. Studying the Earth's rotation on its axis, they found that the Earth moves about 15 degrees every hour. After 24 hours, it has done a complete 360-degree rotation. So scientists use this information to divide the planet into 24 sections. Each section is 15 degrees of longitude wide. Due to the curvature of the Earth, the distance between the zones is greatest at the equator and shrinks to zero at the poles. The center of this time zone map is the Greenwich Mean Time, which is on par with London. As you move west from Greenwich, every 15-degree section is an hour earlier. As you move east, every 15-degree section is an hour later. Now, if you look at a map, Spain should be in the Greenwich Mean Time zone, along with the United Kingdom. But instead, Spain is stuck on the 15-degree time zone to its east, aligning with countries like Poland, Serbia, and Germany. And it's actually Germany that is to blame. You see, Spain wasn't always stuck in a time zone an hour ahead. From 1900 until 1940, it was centered as it should be. But then the Nazis and World War II came along. After 1939, Spain was recovering from its own civil war, which brought dictator Francisco Franco to power. Franco was hell-bent on fighting the world's democratic powers. So with Hitler on the rise in Germany, Franco changed Spain's time zone, moving the clocks 1 hour forward in solidarity with Nazi Germany. But Spaniards were still war-weary, so they had more important things to worry about than the fact that they were now eating their lunches and dinners an hour later. Over time, Spaniards never adjusted their schedules. They just kept eating at the same time, solidifying a night owl habit that would become synonymous with the country itself. While the unnatural timing gives Spaniards their midnight verve, not to mention stunning 10 p.m. sunsets during the summer, living in this time zone for 76 years has wreaked havoc on sleep and productivity in the country. In 2016, the Spanish Prime Minister introduced an initiative to shift the workday schedule to something more healthy. But there's been some pushback to officially reverting to the original time zone. The tourism industry, for one, isn't so keen to give up those long summer nights, but there are also signs that Spain is ready for the big change. Fewer and fewer businesses are closing for that afternoon break, and a study found that only 18% of Spaniards take an actual siesta. But until the country makes a change official, Spaniards are just going to still be stuck in a perpetual jet lag. This week I learned about a mysterious species of pine tree that grows tilted to one side. They're called Cook pines after British explorer Captain James Cook. He first discovered the trees around Papua New Guinea in 1773 on his second trip circumventing the globe as far south as possible. But the trees actually can be found on five continents, including Australia and the United States, primarily in the West Coast. But what's interesting is that the trees tilt in different directions depending on their location. So in California, they bend south, and in Australia, they bend north. And this year, scientists from the California Polytechnic State University finally figured out why. The Cook trees are drawn to the equator. In a search that looked at 256 Cook trees across five continents, scientists found on average the trees lean about 8.5 degrees. But the further you get from the equator, the more dramatically they tilt. One was bent nearly 40 degrees. The behavior is actually due to a common plant trait called phototropism. Your houseplant does this at home. It leans toward the light as it moves. Some cacti are even known to bend a little bit, but trees aren't known for such flexibility. Usually trees can correct for such asymmetry like this. The pull to earth wins over the pull to light. But the Cook trees are an anomaly here, and scientists don't quite know why. It could be an artifact of its genetics that hasn't worn out over time, or it could be the reverse, an adaptive measure to get more light at higher altitudes. This week I learned the dark origins of the word gypped. I learned this fact recently after using the word in a podcast. But another human gypped the raven by keeping the crest. Soon after the podcast went live, a few listeners pointed out my mistake, that gypped is offensive and shouldn't be used. And since this is a podcast about learning, I wanted to share my findings so that if you weren't aware, you wouldn't make the same mistake as I did. You see, gypped is derived from the word gypsy, and gypsy is commonly used to describe the Roma people. The Roma people are a diverse group of people that live across Europe. There are between 11 and 12 million of them, making the Roma people the continent's largest ethnic minority group. Now, the Romani may be known as gypsies, but they did not choose that word. It was imposed upon them by outsiders. Romani are originally from northwestern India, but they were displaced more than 1,000 years ago for a variety of reasons. There was this one large single wave of emigration from northern India about 1,500 years ago, but there was also a series of 11th century Muslim invasions that forced displacement, and many Romani were taken as prisoners of war during the Ottoman plunder of the Byzantine Empire. And these are just some of the reasons why Romani tend to be so widespread today. But thousands of years ago, as the Romani moved westward toward the European continent, they were mistaken for Egyptians because of their features and their dark skin. And this is where those outsiders got the word gypsy. Across many languages, from Old French and English to Turkish, gypsy can be the short form of Egyptian. The problem is that the derivatives of gypsy that are still used today have very negative connotations. According to an excellent article by NPR's Code Switch, the first known recorded definition of the word gypped dates back to 1899. A dictionary of that time defines gypped as probably an abbreviation of gypsy as applied to a sly, unscrupulous fellow. I was using gypped as a synonym for cheated, and if you look up gyp in the dictionary, it means to swindle or a person who swindles. And its usage stereotypes gypsies, and therefore the Roma people, as swindlers. Something I found kind of telling is that when I searched gypped in Google Books, the usage of the word dramatically spikes during World War II around the 1940s. And of course, gypsies were persecuted alongside the Jewish people by the Nazis. According to some estimates, by the end of the war, between 500,000 and 1.5 million gypsies were killed by Nazis. Unfortunately, gypped is arguably one of the most commonly used offensive terms today. Even Michelle Obama used the word during an interview about working families in 2014.
But what I realized was that I got gypped on that front.
Often this usage is accidental, as it was for me, because you don't know the origins. But now you know. So help spread the word and kick it out of our lexicon. And that does it for this episode of This Week I Learned. Look out for new episodes every Friday on iTunes or wherever you get your podcasts. If you'd like to read more about any of the facts I've mentioned, check out theweek.com/podcasts, where you'll also find our 7-Minute Explainers and our 7-Minute Opinions podcast. And if you've made it this far, I'd just like to say thank you to all of you listeners out there. This is my 52nd podcast and my year anniversary of launching this show. It has been an educational ride that I absolutely love doing, and I really love having you along for it. And since you guys seem very keen to learn, the invitation is always out there to share what you have learned with me. To do that, you can find me on Twitter at @MyLaurenHansen. And as a thank you for being such dedicated listeners, I'd love to offer you 4 risk-free issues of The Week magazine. You can get those by visiting theweek.com/4free. I'm Lauren Hansen, and thank you so, so much for listening.